You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics Podcast, and we want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We are here for you Monday through Friday and maybe a little extra during the playoffs, so we hope you are enjoying the program. If you're a new listener and you haven't subscribed, you can do that by downloading the new Himalaya Podcast app, going to Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts exist. Or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics, and you will get us, the Rain and Jays. I am John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by the kid, Jay King of The Athletic, here to talk about adjustments, see what the Pacers are feeling like. Was that Pacers practice today? They seem pretty confident. But first, let's dive into Jay. Your thoughts. You haven't had a chance to espouse on game one.
Like that word. I want to espouse.
Oh, you like that word?
I'm here to espouse.
Yeah, please.
It was one of the ugliest games the world will ever see.
Gross. That was a gross one.
But I also think the defenses had a lot to do with it. Like, the offenses were bad. Bad shots were taken. Bad turnovers were thrown. I haven't seen a five-second inbound violation in a little while.
We talked about that one last night. That was new.
So that was neat. but the defense is, when the Celtics are locked in, they can be really, really good defensively, especially with Horford and Baines, when those two guys can stay on the court together. And the Pacers just kind of play like that all the time, just with physicality and intelligence. So these are two burly defenses that just stood there shaking fists at each other. So I enjoy the defense of it. The offense was it always the same. But game one, I thought from the Celtics perspective, it was probably promising for them to win and win so handily when their offense just wasn't there at all. That's the best defense the Celtics have played in a while, especially the second half.
I think it's important that we note for historical purposes that this 10-point win was not really a 10-point win, that it was a 22-point game with 3 minutes to go.
And because for historical purposes, everyone listens to Locked On Celtics. That's where all the historical documentation goes out.
Somebody is going to put an episode of Locked On Celtics in a time capsule, and when that is unearthed, they will know that historically speaking, like, oh, man, that wasn't a 10-point game. You know, 50 years from now, this is going to be an important, crucial bit of American history. So I appreciate you not poo-pooing it, Jay King.
I am not poo-pooing it. This was more of a 20-point game, according to Locked On Celtics.
This was for the Library of Congress, okay?
Exactly.
So, but let me ask you this. Here's a question I want to get into here. And I'll start with this. I'll read a quote from Nate McMillan at practice on Monday for the Pacers. We got to play through contact. They were being physical with us defensively. They got two hands on our guys and being physical. We got to play through that. If the officials are going to allow that to happen, we got to run through that contact, and we got to play that way too. So I read that quote because I want to ask about the what used to be the freedom of movement in officiating here in the NBA. At the beginning of the season, you couldn't do half the things that were being done in game one without a foul being called. And part of the question is, why bother having that if you're just going to go to the playoffs and allow it anyway? And secondly, if do you think that we're just like, this is going to be it? Like, this is it. And are we just going to, or is it possible that the league office is going to be like, hey, remember freedom of movement. You got to like, you got to buckle down on that. And that game two could be officiated differently.
I mean, it could certainly be officiated differently. I think they let both teams play. To me, I prefer the physical nature of things. And I kind of figured when the playoffs hit, not all those calls be called the same. So I don't.
But what's the point then? What's the point to have like a regular season? Like, hey, everybody, look, 115 to 110. This is awesome. And then we get to the playoffs. And I know 84-74 is an exaggeration, but like, if you're gonna allow it, then just allow it and make this is basketball.
Yeah, but they want more points.
All right. So then call it and have more points than 84-70.
Yeah, but nobody wants that in the playoffs. So many whistles. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants 84-74 either, though.
Right. let's be honest. What they want is for the players to not do the things, but you're always going to test the officials. You're always going to test the officials. I remember when I was in like high school, being told like the first trip down the floor on offense, just slam into your defender when you're getting into the post and see if they call it. And if they don't, then now you know how the game's going to be officiated. Like, that's the same type of like, just go out there and be physical. And both teams are just going to beat the hell out of each other. And hey, I'm all for it. I like the get down, get dirty, and just let the players kind of figure their things out and call the fouls that impact plays, like the impact a shot or something like that. But like, there's a little bit of physicality, a little bit of grabbing, a little bit of shoving, like that. That's cool. I'm down with that. But it's just interesting that we started out this season as you couldn't breathe on a guy and it was a foul, and guys are getting into foul trouble early, and we got these outrageous scores. And now here we are looking at this playoff series, and most playoff series, it's like, yeah, just punch a guy in the face. It's a flagrant one. Yes, I'm referring to the Joel Embiid thing. But
yeah, see, I disagree with you on that one. He was making a move, and he hit a guy with his elbow.
Don't even get that. That was
flagrant one is fine.
No, don't even get me started on that. That was an obvious. That was a trick. I mean, he got away with it.
Let's move on. I apologize for bringing it up.
That was a total post move trick. Anyway, yes, let's move on. That's for another conversation. But anyway, back to the Celtics and the Pacers. We'll discuss this tomorrow. Back to the Celtics and the Pacers. That I think this level of physicality is I like it, and it brings out the best in players, I think. But it also, when you allow the Celtics to do this, remember last year's defense, which was awesome. I think that this year's defense, which hasn't been as good, is partly a function of those freedom of movement rules. And there are a lot of other reasons. I don't want to blame it all on that. But now that they can get back to, hey, let's grab, let's push, let's kind of test the limits of what the officials are going to call, then the Celtics defense can get right back down to what it does best. And that's why you hold a Pacers team to 74 points.
I think the Celtics, I mean, when you allow just 74 points, you've done everything right. And so the areas the Celtics did well, we could spend a long time discussing. One thing I thought they did really well was they were good at noting the biggest threats and paying the most attention to them and forcing the Pacers to go to guys who didn't want the ball. And they did a great job taking Bogdanovich out. They trailed around screens great with him. They busted up dribble handoffs. They were with him on pick and roll coverage all the time. The one possession that stood out was when Horford switched on a Collison in transition, and Collison could go nowhere. And from a Pacers perspective, without Oladipo, they just don't have a lot of guys who can break you down off the bounce. And if you're a point guard, cannot beat an opposing team's big man with 10 seconds of ISO basketball, then you're probably going to have trouble scoring.
Yeah.
And
that was tremendous by Al Horford, though.
Yeah, that was sick. And so that to me, like, they knew McDermott was a shooter. They stayed close to him, barely let him breathe. Bogdanovich hardly got anything easy. Sabonis missed some jumpers, but they're okay with letting him take mid-range jumpers. They're okay with a lot of the almost all of the shots they gave up. They were really good with it. And they rebounded the heck out of the ball. And when you look at this series, especially when the Celtics go smaller off the bench with Marcus Morris at power forward, that's a possible trouble area because Sabonis is so physical and he can really hurt you on the glass. But Morris was great defense on the defensive glass. He got a few big rebounds in traffic, and they really did a good job closing out possession. So the Celtics, I mean, from almost every perspective, they forced the right shots. They closed out possessions. And on top of that, the Pacers did miss some shots that they would often hit. I think the third quarter specifically, when they just scored 8 points, there were a number of jumpers that they missed. But the Celtics, for the most part, like, they forced Indiana to do what Boston wanted. And that was how the game was won.
That's it. You dictate how things go, and you're going to have a very good chance of winning that game. I do think that the Celtics did a good job. They adjusted in the second half. They defended the pick and roll much better than they did in the first half, where they still allowed easy layups. They still allowed a few of those putbacks. They adjusted pretty well. And we'll see how those adjustments go. We're going to talk about more adjustments coming up later on. When we come back, though, I want to talk about some of the things that the Pacers said at their practice today. Celtics were off. Pacers had a practice, so they kind of had a little bit of the spotlight today. We'll talk about that when we come back. I'm going to remind everybody, baseball season is here. Locked On has expanded into the MLB side. So Locked On Red Sox, if you're a Boston Celtics fan, if you're a Boston sports fan, Locked On Red Sox is one of the new podcasts that we have on the network. Or whatever baseball team you want, if you are a fan of any baseball team, go ahead and search for that on the wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be right back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. The overwhelming vibe from the Indiana Pacers practice Monday at the TD Garden was the third quarter was horrible. The third quarter for the Celtics was pretty good. And all we need to do is play the same defense and make a few shots, and we'll give ourselves a chance to win. Let me start with this. Do you think that is an accurate statement?
I mean, if you hold, they literally, the Celtics had their worst offensive rating of the entire season, regular season included. So when you look at it that way, like, yeah, probably if the Pacers hold Boston to that same offensive output, they should be in every game and it should be a lot closer moving forward. But the Pacers, it's more than that to me, especially in the second half. The Celtics, comparative to the Pacers, did a lot of what they wanted. And it wasn't just the third quarter. It continued until basically the Celtics took out their starters or their rotation players late in the game. They were pouring it on and they were getting open shots, and Indiana wasn't doing much of that. I'm interested to see how the Pacers try to free up their offense. And I don't know, there's not an obvious answer, but they're going to need more from Bogdanovich. He can't go just 4-for-11 every game. And they're going to need more from a number of guys. I mean, they scored 74 freaking points.
Right, right.
But they need to do find some way to get Bogdanovich a little bit of space. He rarely had any room to operate. And the Celtics did what I thought was just an electric job of taking him out of the game.
One of the things that they were harping on, at least to the media, and we know when people say things to the media, it's take it with a grain of salt because they could just be sending out one message when they're preparing to do something else. However, it was a pretty universal when we talked to McMillan, when we talked to Bogdanovich, we talked to Thad Young. All of them kind of were saying the same thing. So they're either extremely on brand or on message, or this is kind of what they're thinking, that clean up some of the little things that Bogdanovich says, I have to do a better job of setting up my man so the bigs can get a hit on him. And so when he's got the ball, he maybe was a little anxious. I could see some of that. You're a little anxious, moving too quick. And if you are part of the pick and roll is the guy who sets the pick, but the guy with the ball has to set up the defender so he can be picked. And Bogdanovich admitted that he didn't do a great job of setting up his guy to be picked. And that can be just a little thing that gets him free. That the Pacers think that it's just a matter of, rather than forcing the issue, giving up the ball when you see two guys on you, being cleaner when it comes to setting screens, taking the open shot, and if it's not a good shot, pass in the next open shot could be a better shot. Which, on one hand, Jay, seems sure, makes total sense. On the other hand, from a Celtics perspective, if that's really what they're thinking, like, okay, great, think that. Because without any real adjustments to get Bogdanovich, if your answer to getting Bogdanovich open is, I just need to set my guy up better for the pick, then you're not going to get open. Like, you need to do some other things. You need to get creative with some of the ways that he's going to get open and put the Celtics in binds. Put Celtics defenders in a position to make a decision. And again, take it with a grain of salt, Jay, but if that's what they're thinking, then I would say that the Celtics should have a little bit of an easier time in game two.
That's kind of the problem for Indiana to me, is that they don't have a lot of options. From a personnel standpoint, they just don't have a lot of guys who can create. And maybe their adjustment in game two is to try to go to the post more and try to force switches with Kyrie Irving guarding Wes Matthews or Thad Young or Bogdanovich or whoever the case may be. The Celtics generally held up on those in game one, but maybe they just need to do a better job of getting better post-up position. Maybe that's one of their answers, especially if you can't find space elsewhere. You know, maybe you try to get Kyrie in foul trouble, attack that.
Yeah.
And then I'm probably going to say this like eight times throughout this series. Every time I watch the Pacers play, I just think Thad Young, if he were just a little better three-point shooter, would make them so much more dangerous. Like, Baines and Horford can just sag off him and dare him to shoot, and he hardly ever wants to do it. And even if he does do it, Celtics aren't too put off by it. Like, if he makes it, whatever, he only shoots like 31 or 32%, whatever it is, on limited attempts. If he were just like a 36 or 37% three-point shooter and could shoot those regularly, it would make such a huge difference for him, for them, and he'd be so tough. But, yeah, that's my weird random thing I've just been harping on every single time I watch the Pacers. It's just like, man, Thad Young would be so good if he could just shoot the three ball.
He's a career 33% shooter. This past regular season, he shot it at just under 35%, which is just a tick under league average, which, you know, it kind of falls under Marcus Smart. Like, Thad Young and Marcus Smart are so, like, similar. It's just Thad's, like, 3-4 inches taller. But
Thad only takes a couple of games.
That's where I was going. Like, he at 35 – like, he should be – if he's hitting at 35%, let's say, that should be, like, right on the money. Go ahead and take, like, he should be taking like 3-4 a game. I agree with you. I'm supporting your point here that he should have the Marcus Smart mentality, and that could change a lot of things. It's funny. Some of these teams that struggle, the answer is kind of within them. Just having that willingness to be aggressive we get on Smart, or people have gotten on Smart in the past. He's not a great shooter. You got to, you know, what are you doing shooting so much? But just that willingness to do it, I think sometimes defenses will react to a guy shooting sometimes without even recognizing exactly who's shooting. Even if they start to react and then stop, it's enough to accomplish the goal of softening up a defense. And just that willingness of a guy to be out there can open some things up. So I agree with you. I think there's something there. So for the Pacers, watching that third quarter, there was definitely a 2 or 3 minute stretch at the beginning of the quarter that could have reshaped the entire game. And to support them a little bit in their claim that just make some shots and things would be different, there were some very makeable shots early on in the third quarter. We look at the third quarter as 26-8 and just this blowout. The Celtics putting up 26 points on 43% shooting is not some monster third quarter. That's as pedestrian a quarter as you get. 26 points is like average. 43% is not great shooting. They shot 2 of 4 from three. That's nice, but only four three-pointers. It wasn't like the Celtics put up a 42-point quarter and blew the doors off of them. There is some credence to the Pacers saying, just make a couple of those shots. Like Collison missed a couple of shots. Turner missed a wide-open three. There are guys who missed open shots, and then things started to really spiral out of control, and they got frustrated, and they pressed, and then they just looked horrible. So I do think there's something to that, and I wouldn't expect them to miss that many shots in game two, but they're not great offensively to begin with, and the playoff intensity and the playoff defense tends to take that away. So if they don't make shots, if they can't just make some of those open shots, they're just going to be in the exact same place. Why don't we take a break and then come back? We'll talk about adjustments, different lineups, different things that both teams can do. Going into game two, I know it's still a couple of days away, but you listen to this on Tuesday, it's tomorrow, but we'll have a practice with the Celtics and figure out what they're talking about. But for now, we'll look at some of the adjustments the teams can make. Reminder that there's also the Locked On NFL side of the podcast network. And right now, if you follow Locked On NFL or Locked On NFL Draft, they're doing a whole big mock draft. The NFL Draft is a huge event. It's coming up in about a week and a half. And so follow the Locked On NFL side of things, Locked On NFL Draft, for this huge, awesome mock draft that you're doing. Do that. We'll be right back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Jay, I'm going to start this segment by saying I didn't like how Jaylen Brown played in game one. He did play some good defense, but it just wasn't the Jaylen Brown that we were used to seeing. And let's
start. Yeah, I disagree.
Do you? Okay.
He took a couple bad shots.
Uh-huh.
And he did a couple dumb things offensively. I will freely admit that.
Yep.
But if you take the Pacers' best player out of the game the way he did, and limit him the way he did, and hustle around screens the way he did, then I think the Celtics coaches can live with a few of the mistakes he made.
He did a fine job defensively. Although in the first half, I would say it wasn't quite as good. In the second half, he stepped it up and was really great. But here's my contention, and you tell me if you agree or not, that Jaylen Brown as the starter is one more mouth to feed offensively, and part of why the Celtics struggled offensively was because they had one more guy that was looking for his own offense. And granted, he didn't force anything. I want to be clear. I didn't think he forced anything. But one more guy that was looking for his own offense that took away from opportunities for Kyrie and Al to get going. I still feel like starting somebody other than Jaylen Brown is a better option than starting Jaylen Brown?
I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I think Jaylen, for the most part, wanted to make good things happen. There was one play I can remember. He drove by his man, got into the paint, drew Horford's guy, and found Horford for a wide open corner three. Mm-hmm. Horford missed it, but I think for the most part, his mind was in the right place. He was trying to do the right things. One thing I thought the Celtics did very poorly was attacking Indiana's switches. When Indiana was switching, a lot of the time, you know, Boston would try to go at Sabonis or go at Thad Young with their perimeter players. When Horford had like Bogdanovich or Wes Matthews or Tyreek Evans on him, find Horford. And that's where the patience comes in to me. And that's where the Celtics' lack of patience really rears itself. Like, if you have Kyrie on Miles Turner, find Kyrie. If you have Horford with a smaller guy on him on the block, find him. Go at that mismatch. And the Celtics weren't always smart about how they attacked those switches. I thought a couple of times they found Gordon Hayward when Darren Collison got on him and punished the Pacers for that, but they just didn't do it frequently enough. I think Horford, if the Pacers play the same way with as many switches as they do, should get a lot more post-ups in the next game. And the Celtics have to be aware of the mismatches he gets. And that, to me, was a pretty big issue for them in game one.
I'm a big fan of Horford in the post, and I think they should go to it. I think it should be a staple of their offense. I'm not a fan of running the high pick and roll with Baines and Horford in the corner. Al Horford in the corner shot 28.6% on threes during the regular season. That's, I don't think, like, and I will say it was 21 corner threes that he took. He took 182 above the break threes and shot almost 37%. He's just not used to being in the corner. Him spotting up in the corner, it's just not his comfort area. I understand theoretically him in the corner, and I understand that any corner three is generally something that you want. I'm just saying, having Al Horford spotting up in the corner is not how you want to use Al Horford. And they did that a little too much in the first half, and I didn't like how that went. And going back to my original argument, I don't know that Jaylen Brown being in the starting lineup is – that's the result of Jaylen Brown being in the starting lineup. I just think that they just tried to find a way to space the floor. And when they had Aaron Baines on the floor, running the pick and roll with Baines and trying to space it with Horford seemed to make sense. But I didn't like that. I agree, more Al Horford in the post. I still am going to say that the way the Celtics are going to put up 115 points and score like crazy is to have Hayward and Brown. I just like Hayward and Brown coming off the bench. And if that means start Mook, then start Mook. I was on the Shemmy train. I still think that starting Shemmy could work. I think there are ways to guard
but
Bogdanovich.
Here's the issue with that. Then you have Bogdanovich coming and firing around screens, and you have either Morris or Ojale guarding him or whoever you'd want to start. And that's just not going to work. Jalen's so much better than those guys at getting around screens and staying attached to a guy when he's locked in.
But the way they defended that pick and roll with Bogdanovich is you trail the screen, and so it was Sabonis with Al Horford guarding him. So Sabonis sets the screen, Jaylen Brown trails over the top, and then they switched, but it was like a late switch, and then Horford would go over to Bogdanovich and cut off his lane, and Jaylen would go to Sabonis and cover Sabonis. So if the Celtics are covering that pick and roll that way, then you could still have Shemi Ojeleye trailing over the top of the screen, and then he fires down to cover the guy who sets the pick, and then he's strong enough to cover that guy in the post, and you don't need to scram switch a guy out of there. So I still think, like, I agree to if they're just covering it a little more traditionally, I agree with your point that Jaylen Brown is going to do that. But if they're going to cover it the way they were covering it in the second half, and they're going to have the bigs really stepping up to just cut off Bogdanovich's penetration, then I think you can still do it with somebody else. And why I've been so harping on Ojeleye is that I just don't want another guy that's going to take up too much of the offense. And I want to save Jaylen Brown's offense for that second unit. And even if that first unit is not going great, that second unit with Hayward and Brown, I just like them against the Pacers second unit to pick up some of that scoring. That's my thought on that.
Do you think the Celtics should keep resting Al Horford and Kyrie at the same time?
No, not at all. No, I think that needs to stop as well. But if they're going to do it, then they need to have like Hayward and Brown on the floor. But I think they should find a way to stagger that somehow. And so maybe you sub Kyrie out.
I think it would have been a lot easier if you had Marcus Smart in the rotation.
Sure. Because you can't have Terry Rozier doing it. I'm sorry, I didn't like Terry Rozier's game last night. He did some nice things, but I didn't like the way he played last night. I think if it might be a case where you sub Kyrie out, because he's been playing Kyrie the entire first quarter. You sub Kyrie out at maybe like the 8 minute mark. So instead of at six, he's been bringing in Hayward plus, in game one it was Mook, but it had been Jaylen in the past, whatever the combination is. Instead of that, you bring one guy in, and then at eight, you bring Kyrie out, and then you start the second quarter with Kyrie, and then, or you bring Kyrie back at like the 10-minute mark. Some combination of that where you minimize that and stagger him in Al Horford. I really think you need to have those guys on as much as possible.
Yeah. I think because the Celtics got a comfortable lead and because it was just game one, we didn't see Brad load up minutes for some of his main guys. Like, he didn't play Horford and Baines, both huge minutes, and use them primarily as the center options. He came back with Tice in a backup role. It was kind of like a normal minutes allocation, yeah. I thought, like a regular season minutes allocation in a lot of ways. We didn't see him switch up to a playoff rotation. I'm sure we probably will at some point later in the playoffs. Maybe he just didn't think it was necessary in that first game. Maybe he was saving it for the second half if the game got close, whatever. But we didn't see much of a change from Stevens in regards to the rotation.
Maybe you're right. Maybe he's thinking like, I don't need to go full bore here. Maybe I don't need to unload the clip in this game because we've got a long playoff run. And if he feels like playing the regular season rotations is enough to beat the Pacers, then all right, so be it. Then it's going to be a little bit closer and a little bit more of a nail biter than we thought. And he's just going to say, save it for the Bucks, because you're going to need it against the Bucks for sure.
The Bucks would be such a fascinating matchup to me, because I think we've seen enough of the Baines Horford duo over the last couple of years to know that when those two guys are on the court, the Celtics defense is going to be so, so damn good. And when you can get away with having those guys, defense is going to be elite and you're going to give yourself a chance every game. I don't think that's the way to combat the Bucks. I think the way to combat the Bucks is to try to target Lopez with Horford pick and pops and play speed and shooting everywhere against them.
Yeah.
And obviously you still have to have enough size to guard Giannis and all the shooters and everything like that. But I think you have to be able to go small in that series. And so that, assuming the Celtics make it that far, it would be a totally different series than this one against the Pacers is. Like, this is set up for them to be grimy, for them to get stops, for them to play Baines and Horford as much as possible, for them to post up Horford down low, for them to be physical as all hell. And the Bucks series is going to be like pick and pop, pick and pop, pick and pop, pick and pop, three, 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 three. So the contrast will be really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be a totally different series. It's going to be very indicative of how matchups dictate rotations and who plays and when they play and how you play. It's going to be, I agree, it's going to be a fascinating change. But that's still many, many games away and like feels like a month away the way this schedule is laid out in the playoffs. So game two is coming up on Wednesday. We've still got a another Wednesday pregame podcast to do, which we'll do at some point after the Celtics practice. The Celtics took Monday off. They're back on the practice floor on Tuesday, and we will be there, and we will talk about what happened there if there is anything interesting to talk about. In the meantime, I hope that you are all of you new listeners, are all enjoying the show enough to subscribe, which you can do on the new Himalaya podcast app, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, everywhere podcasts exist, and on your smart device, you can tell it, play podcast, Locked On Celtics, and it will do so. All of you regular subscribers, that five-star rating and the good review sustains our souls and helps us out immensely. And, of course, sharing the podcast is great. Tell everybody to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.